Blog Talk Radio.
Hey, what's up now?
Brother,
what's up?
This is a TV party, man.
Mother, there's too many of you crying.
It's going to be a live panel discussion
brother,
for this
radio
show.
Yes, sir. There's far too many of you dying. You know we've got to find a way to bring some loving here today. Yeah. Father, Father, we don't need to escalate. You see, war is not the answer, for only love can conquer hate.
You know we find a way.
Picket lines and picket signs. Don't punish me with brutality. Talk to me so you can see.
Good evening, good evening, and welcome back, and I mean literally welcome back. So I put that little prelude on there to say who's that lady. Y'all know who I am. I am your sister, Queen Aziza Mariam Muhammad, and it is such a pleasure to be live with everyone this evening. It's good to be back on the air. You know I miss y'all. I want to hear your voices. I want you to push one on your keypad if you got a question or a comment. I'm looking for old friends and new friends. And so tonight, this evening, I'm used to hosting at night, but this evening, Nation Building presents Descendants of American Slaves, Solution to the Economic Decline. And of course, I'm going to be joined by an illustrious panel of gentlemen. Of course, we got Brother Gene Gordon, we got Brother Vernon Muhammad, and of course, we got Dr. Bob Brantley, and we got some other people on here. I don't know who they are, but those are the people that you're going to hear from this evening as we cover this very, very vital topic in our society today. Before we get started and before I turn it over to my co-host, Gene Gordon, I just want to share some information, you know how I always do. In 2021, the Federal Reserve indicated that 1% of America's households held 32.3% of America's wealth, and the bottom half of 50% only held 2.3% of the United States wealth. That is total inequality right there. The divide or the wealth gap has increased in the last 10 years about 13%. That means that these people, the top 1%, earn 13.53% more income than anybody else in the United States. Between the years of 2011 and 2021, the wealth gap definitely increased. But here's another issue. By the year 2030, and this is a discussion that's been long going on between Bill Gates and Elon Musk, that 800 million jobs all over the world, I guess, will be replaced by robotics. This was a study that Elon Musk and Bill Gates did with a research foundation called McKinsey and Company. They say that up to one-third of the world's workforce will lose jobs to robotics, and that they're going to start in the United States and in Germany, where China has already implemented 12% of their workforce to robotics. That means 12% of China's population lost their jobs to robots. Do you know how large China is? That unemployed a lot of people. But they also say that those in the know are now updating their skills in robotics. Some of the areas of work that have been affected have been mortgage origination, paralegal jobs, accounting and back office administrative assistant jobs have been replaced with robotics. Human labor is no longer a factor. People will need to update their skills. And I just want you to understand, like, where will we be if this happens? You know, there are 329 million people in the U.S. If 12% or 30% or whatever they're predicting of people will be replaced by robotics, do you know what that would do to the crime rate? And we are only 12.4% of the population in the United States. We used to be 13.76%. So we're dying, we're not having babies, and we're going to be out of the economic loop if we don't participate in this solution. Because Brother Gene Gordon has over the last couple of years and created legislation that made sense to the governing bodies in the state of Missouri. And we want to share this information so that other states will start to participate and pass this legislation nationwide so that we can close that wealth gap, so that we can become owners and not slaves. Because if we don't turn this around now, your children, who are very young, and your grandchildren will be enslaved. So I'm going to finish talking at that point right there, and I'm going to turn it over to our brother and our co-host, Brother Gene Gordon. Good afternoon, Brother Gene. How are you?
Good evening, Queen. I'm doing okay, and a good evening, audience. You mentioned something in your opening. You know, you said 2.3%, you know, of people own the nation's wealth. Out of that 2.3%, Black America owns 1.5% of that wealth. And not only that, that's today. Now, post-slavery, right after slavery, Blacks still owned 1.5% of the nation's wealth. So the question
is,
we haven't moved not one iota, in the words of Claude Anderson. We haven't moved not one iota. So that's an interesting, you know, point there. You know, we haven't moved since post-slavery. We haven't enriched our lives since post-slavery. Also, you know, you talk about upgrading skills. They say upgrade skills. Robotics is replacing human labor. Those of you, if you go into Applebee's who eat out, go into Applebee's, Steak and Shake, McDonald's, you see kiosks. Here and right over the river in Illinois, what's the name of the company that you get packages from? Can't think of them.
UPS?
No, the new one. My mind is not there right now. However, they in their warehouse,
Amazon,
ran by Amazon. Thank you, Amazon. in the Amazon warehouse, it's ran by 800 robots that actually picks up pallets that humans used to do, pull the parts, ship it, and everything. So it's replacing human labor. Robotics is replacing jobs, and not just manufacturing jobs. People here in St. Louis was excited about Federal Express building its biggest and most valuable automated plant in the history of FedEx here in Missouri, and they were excited about that. But they missed the key word, automation. Yes, it's the biggest automation plan. They say that it's going to produce 10,000 jobs. Well, yeah, it produced 10,000 jobs, but how many jobs did it eliminate? So those are some of the things that we have to begin to look at. You know, and for us, that's the conventional way of keeping up is they said upgrading our skills, go back to school and learn robotics. Well, how many of us have that ability to go back to school to take another trade in robotics? And what about the elders? What about the poor who can't go back to school? So our solution at Dr. ESJ is give us equal access opportunity to become owners of some of the new advanced technology in robotics that's replacing human labor. Because if we don't get equal access opportunity to own some of those assets that are being created in America, and it can be done. You know, it's robotics and all that is called capital. It can be done by capital formation. But in giving us access to own some of the new advanced technology, it shouldn't be based on just past savings. It can be done based on future savings and future profits. You mentioned the Federal Reserve, and the Federal Reserve can play a very key role in getting this done for every citizen here in America.
Yes, sir, absolutely. And Dr. Bob Brantley, do you have anything you want to offer to that subject matter? Dr. Brantley, are you with us? Okay, well, we'll come back to him. Brother Vernon, you have anything you want to offer to that?
Yes, ma'am. Just want to say that as you listen to the audience, I'm saying this, as you listen to this information, think about what's being said in terms of being an owner, being a controller instead of being a consumer and a user. We're going to find out about getting access to resources that we can use to empower ourselves and empower one another. So that means we're going to get power and control in our hands. So listen to what you're saying with that in mind, okay? It's time for us to come up.
Absolutely.
Yes.
And that, go ahead, Brother Gene.
I'm sorry. Yes. And you also mentioned in your opening statement about, you know, the legislation that was passed here in Missouri. That's a step forward to getting ownership, you know, not just, you know, particularly the technology world, but it all includes that within the new legislation with the Citizen Land Development Co-op. It all must start at a state and local level, you know, starting right hit home in your community. And that's what we've done in St. Louis, Missouri, in the state of Missouri, is started at the community level. And then once we start at the community level and local level, then we go and start to on a national level.
Okay. So, Brother T, let me just ask you so that people can get an understanding. Can you give us a brief description of what the legislation contains and how people will benefit? Because we want to give them solutions and give them the information on how they can participate as well. You know, we don't want to just give you information. We want you to become proactive in bringing about resolution to the economic crisis that we are in, that we probably don't even know that when white people say it's a recession, then we are already in a recession. And the reason why I say white people is because the majority of them are part of the 1%, not prejudice, I'm not racist or anything like that. I'm just telling the truth. When you look at the statistics of the wealth, it's more people of the Caucasian persuasion have the majority of the wealth versus any other minority group of people. So I'm just saying, like, let's talk about what the solution is. And also, Brother Gene, offer them where they can actually go to participate, if you don't mind.
Okay, yeah. The Citizen Land Development Co-op is the legislation that we just got signed into law back on June 30th. And what the Citizen Land Development Cooperative is, it's a cooperative collecting citizens, and it's linking people to land and technology through ownership. It's a for-profit where we can redevelop the city, and the citizens will participate in the planning process, the design process. So you're really getting the citizens and the people involved and what happens and what goes down in their community. When you have gentrification, it's a way of ending gentrification. And what they do with gentrification is then private investors come in, redevelop your community without even asking or seeing what are the concerns and needs of the citizens. So the Citizen Land Development Co-op will offer each citizen, permanent resident, equal voting share of dividend payouts of the development. They'll like land leases. And the idea is to attract new corporations back and will do the development for new corporations to come and move back into the city, those who have left, preferably advanced technology companies such as solar panels and so forth, and hopefully to set up this ESOP corporation, employee stock ownership plan, which will offer good paying jobs to the citizens of the community. And not only that, the employees will have an equal share of in the company, of owning shares in the company. So preferably those type of corporations, and they will lease the land from the citizens. So if a grocery store chain moves into your community, you know, they lease the land from the citizen. When outsiders, immigrants come and move into the city neighborhoods, you know, they either lease the land from the private owner or they build on the land. Well, in that case, under the Citizen Land Development Co-op, they would lease the land from the citizens, and the citizens will get a dividend payout from the land leases. So it's a way on a state level to actually begin to get ownership into the hands of citizens of that community.
Yes, sir. All right, Brother Gene, thank you for that. And I just want to say briefly, you know, those of you who are listening online or you on your phone, you know, go to your browser, go to das4esj.org, and that's DAS, the number 4ESJ, www.ccg.org, and check out our website. And if you, you know, are so inclined to want to become a member, there's an opportunity for you to become a member. And there are also different levels of participation within the organization. This is a brand new organization. We're building, we're creating leaders. And so those of you who I know have those leadership skills, we need your, you know, we need your minds, you know, we need your bodies, we need your support, we need your ideas, your ability to have creative insight to what we're doing in the community. And this covers all aspects of life, whether it's economics, whether it's arts and entertainment, whether it's media, whether it's health and human services. There's a position in DOS for everyone to participate and become a problem solver in your own community, no matter what states or city that you're in. I didn't want to neglect or not acknowledge that Dr. Norman Curlin is also with us today, and I want to give the listening audience an opportunity for him to speak, and then we'll start taking questions on what you've heard so far. So, Dr. Curlin, would you oblige us?
Can you hear me?
Yes, sir, we can. Okay. Yes, sir.
Yeah, let me say this. Yeah. Let me say this before Norm Curlin gets started. Dr. Norm Curlin was the architect and pioneer of the Citizen Land Development Co-op. He actually was the one that put it together. And the Citizen Land Development Co-op can be replicated in other cities. The legislation that we got passed in Missouri can also be replicated in other cities and community and rural areas. I just wanted to say that.
Well, thank you, Gene. I think that's true, and it's very important to point out that in the legislation that was passed, there's no money available that would come from traditional sources. So the next legislation, which you have been promoting through Senator Carla May, is called a promotion called the Economic Democracy Act. Now, this would change the money system so that the Federal Reserve, instead of creating money that is owned by a tiny fraction of humanity, money could be invented to buy the automation, the artificial intelligence that are replacing people, even lawyers, people who spend $1 million to get their degree in law, find that in trying to get jobs, artificial intelligence can provide the means by which law firms can get all kinds of technical legal language so that they don't need the lawyers, and that's what's going to be happening. In all fields, there's artificial intelligence will begin to provide technical skills in which you don't need people. That is, you'll need people to develop the artificial intelligence, but and to put the design in there, but once it's done, then corporations or law firms or corporations of any kind will be turning more and more in the future to where people will lose their jobs. But the interesting thing is, if every person, every child from the time of birth, every woman and every man within the country and eventually the world would have access to money power, to money that's created by a central bank, and the citizens would be able to go to their local bank and get that money so that they can buy shares in those corporations that are in need, or either not just corporations, as I said, it could be law firms, but those who are involved in the economic system, so that only a few would have the jobs. So what do you do instead? If, in fact, you are going to be losing your work, initially they're going to have to continue with welfare. But every year they would get about a child born today, and every woman, every man under the growth statistics in the United States would get about $12,000 a year to buy newly issued shares by the corporations that want to buy these the automation and artificial intelligence. Then, no citizen would have to pay for it. It would be available free to every citizen from the poorest DAS to the wealthiest Caucasian. They would all get the same $12,000 a year. Now, what does that mean? Well, as I said, initially people without jobs are going to have to get their money through the welfare system. But that can be done, and it will only be maybe 10 years in order to gain enough income from the shares to pay for the shares. In other words, you got to pay for them. But it be interest-free money, but there be a little charge in order to cover the expenses of insurance to make sure that they're secure loans, and maybe 1%, and that would also cover bank and central bank, the people who run the central banks and the commercial banks, so you'd be able to pay them for whatever services they provide to all the citizens, which would be they would issue, as I said, new money, and we have to say, what is money? Money is something. In order to understand it, it is not a commodity. It is not a thing. It is a way. It's a way of measuring value. That whenever you go into today or in the future, whenever citizens engage in activity and have money available, they think, and they rightfully think, that what they're giving, that it's of equal value of what they're getting. So you got consumption and you have production should be in balance if you're going to have a world system where a marketplace is there to have everybody participate. And that's what we're talking about, so that you'd have the money for measuring the value to buy the shares each year, which was about $4 trillion of new capital formation in recent years. You divide that by the population, then you know what the child would get, but also what the wealthy would be. But it would also, now this is very important, that after the Second World War, the UN was formed, the United Nations was formed, and they had a Universal Declaration of Human Rights. Article 17 said, every person has the right to own property, personally as well as in association with others. And then there was the other sentence, that you should never, no, there should be no violation of the property rights of existing owners. Now, even those trillionaires, people who would have trillions of dollars, the one thing they haven't figured out how to do is take that with them when they die. So we can change not only the money system, but also the tax system, so that instead of following Marx, where he said you had a progressive income tax, which we have, we are following Marx on that. But also Marx said, and this was his problem, he says you got to abolish private property. Now, private property is not...
Okay, Dr. Kerman, wait a minute.
Yes.
Dr. Kerman, one
that's
second.
That's all I have to say. That is all
I have
to say. Thank you.
Someone has a question, so I wanted to give them an opportunity to ask a question.
Fine.
Okay.
Fine.
Go ahead, Gene.
Norm, you iterated that dividend payouts will be... began after 10 years. So
dividend payouts start from the time the shares are bought and put into place so that they become productive. You see, you buy shares, which buys the technology, and then as soon as the production takes place, which would be much faster in the world we're talking about, But as soon as then you begin to have dividends, because we would have a tax system which forces the corporation to give all the profits out and not keep them within the company to increase the ownership of existing owners.
Yeah, what I was mentioning is once a citizen received the $11,000 to $12,000 a year allotment. So what Norm is saying is that there's creating money available to every citizen, so a citizen will not have to. You can participate in the new automation that's being created,
right?
And it not dependent on your past savings. That 60% of Americans only have $1,000 in your savings. So you're saying that there is a way that money can be created for everyone to be able to participate in the new creation of automation and artificial intelligence. Can you explain to the audience what you mean by when you say that money can be created, and why do you feel that money can be created? Is it money being created today for something else? And not?
No. Money is being created in order to purchase the new capital through in the form of a newly issued corporate shares that want to grow. And they want to get automation, or they want to get artificial intelligence, or they want to get machine, or they want to get land. Anything.
Yeah.
Instead of people that's required for the production of food and everything else, you know, housing and all kinds of things that can be produced that those with money can buy them. Those without money can't.
Yeah, my point was being that most of the listeners, they say, well, how can money be created? You know, who's going to create the money? And I guess I'll just go ahead and explain it, that the Federal Reserve has already created money, and they're already creating money today that's not backed up by anything but government debt. They're creating money for, you know, and lending it to governments. You know, we're saying that
you're absolutely
right. We're saying you can create some money, person, to become owners of the new capital that's being created, the new automation.
You're right, Gene. And not only that, is the Federal Reserve has the power to create money in the way I'm talking. They have the power. If you go to Section 13 of the Federal Reserve Act of 1905, you're going to find that they have the power.
1913.
It's called bills of exchange. It's to finance not existing capital, but capital to be created. And that's what we're talking about. And it gets it created by the issuance of shares that can be bought by somebody if they have the money.
Yeah.
Well, most people obviously don't. So therefore, what makes our, and this is not my idea, by the way. I mean, I had to discover it. I used to be a big fan of welfare. I worked in the war on poverty, and I saw they don't create ownership. None of the poverty programs look to create equal ownership opportunity, and that's inconsistent with our Constitution. The Constitution says every citizen. Yeah, go ahead.
I got another question for you.
Sure.
Why do you feel that DAS, Descendants of American Slaves, be champion this cause and
well, not only that, I could tell you, Gene, I told you that the first time we met. I think that given the fact that descendants of slaves were beginning to ask for reparations or just give us money, you know, so we can spend it, that doesn't change the ownership system. And so when you came in and said what you wanted to do in reparations to you, and this is what impressed me and got me and all of our associates to want to support you, because you said that's to reparations is to repair the system. And that's what, not only does this country need that, country in the world, because this is the way to end poverty, this is the way to end racism, and this is the way to end war.
Okay. All right. Queen Aziza,
I'm sorry.
There?
Yes, I'm sorry. I had to sneeze. I didn't want to sneeze on the air. Okay, so I want to remind the listening audience that if anyone has a question, please press 1 on your dial pad, and we will be happy to take your question. And we want to hear from you. We want to hear your question and your comments about the conversation that you're hearing now. Is Dr. Bob Brantley, are you with us? Dr. Brantley? I see that he's on, but I can't hear him. Dr. Brantley, are you there? Okay. Well, he can catch up with us later. Okay, so the next thing I want to move on to, Brother Gene, if you would, you know, so graciously help us, with the 9 areas of council that people can actually participate in, because we want people to know that this is all inclusive. This is not black. This is not white. This is everybody. Every living, breathing human being is impacted by the global economy. The global economy is declining, and that is because of the current economic system that keeps poor people poor and keeps rich people rich. And that wealth gap is devastating to poor people, because as we face this thing called inflation, or we face these things called recession, it is absolutely almost impossible for people to survive, to maintain, you know, daily life, just to pay rent and keep your children fed and go to the doctor and buy medication. But there are also young people out there who, you know, have lost their way. And so there's an avenue that you all can participate in as well. It's not just us old heads sitting up here trying to run something, because we're talking about your future. So we need young people to get involved. And Gene, would you tell them about the 9 areas of council that they can participate in so that we can, you know, show people that this is all inclusive?
Yeah, that's we call it the St. Louis Council of Community Boards. And if you want to replicate this in your city, then you can call it, you know, the Council of Community Boards, whatever city you're in. But what it is, its mission is to serve as a clearinghouse for economic and social injustice operated in your particular community. It includes churches, schools, community groups, social agencies, teachers, and individuals. So it will be, you know, beginning with a group of citizens, and it's just a citizen's governance. And it's made up of 9 different councils. Within those councils, you have such as the Council of Technology. You have a Youth and Millennial Board. You have a Council of Education Council. We have to start getting involved with our educational system. You know, all of these and social institutions that there's disparities within these institutions. There's an arts and culture council. You have an agriculture council. We have to start to get into urban farming. I mean, things like an advance to vertical farming. You know, vertical farming will be a $10 to $20 billion industry within the next 5 years. You have an interfaith council. Everybody needs that spiritual upliftment, and it's not based on, you know, from all religious persuasions. And we have a Just Trade and Commerce Council. We have to start beginning to learn the science of business. You know, we have black businesses, you know, and you want to support black businesses and other businesses, but we have to learn on how to get to the next level, how to become, you know, involved in producer goods and services. So the 9 areas of councils, I'm going to repeat them. You have the educational council, you have the arts and culture council, you have science and technology, health and human services, the criminal justice council, information council, agriculture, interfaith council, and just trade and commerce. And I think these councils are designed to cover the full scope of human needs and are central to the commission for the structuring and organization of a community. And the primary focus of the St. Louis Council of Community Board is to facilitate the development of the course of action. We've got to start taking courses of action. You know, here in St. Louis, we just had, you know, that political corruption. Well, power tends to corrupt. You know, when you give governments too much power, or any leader too much power, it leads to corruption. So we have to get, we talk about the problems that our communities are having. You know, everybody knows the problem. Well, when are we going to begin to come together and come up with solutions to the problem? And we can't come with, you know, programmatic solutions. We have to come with systemic solutions to solve a systemic problem. And I think that the St. Louis Council or the 9 areas of council, it's a way of building and sustaining a thriving, just community.
Okay. And Brother Vernon, so can you tell us how you see the current economic system and its impact and kind of expound on the need for a new economic system and why this current one is not working?
Yes, I think listening to Brother Gene and Brother Norm, they summed it up, really. There's haves and have-nots. There's people who are in the conversation and people who are left out of the conversation. It's time for us to get into the conversation. And it's one thing if we look at the situation as it is and we say, oh, they're doing this to us, and this is happening, and it's so bad that
you know, however many thousands of us are disenfranchised, but there is a better way, okay? Solutions now are being put on the table, and I like to simplify things. As I'm listening to what's being said, I like to, it boils down in my mind to what we going to do, what we going to do next, and what we going to do now. That's the crux of what I'm pulling from this conversation. And some great things are being put in place by DOS3ESJ, by this whole movement for social, economic and social justice. And I think that if we individually take the excuses out of the way, take our own excuses out of the way,
come on,
right?
Brother.
We can escape the rat race. We can escape the rat race. Mm-hmm. Nobody wants to be on the 40-40 plan where you got to work 40 hours a day for 40 years of your life, and at the end of it, you still throwing your hands up like, what just happened? Because you know that you should have more to show for all that effort and time. We're talking about ownership, and while we were on this call, I'm driving right now, and the passenger who was in my car just got out, but we were talking and listening, and I was explaining this with the example of, hey, you know, look at development that happens in your city. You know, new stadiums are built, new places come pop up. You don't have any say in that. I know some deal is done. Somebody made some money. You didn't get none of that, but your taxpayer dollars surely subsidized it or went into it somehow. But we finally found a way to make sure that some of that that they are getting, that they are winning, that they make all the money with, well, some of that should come back to you. Again, we got to start thinking like owners and like people who have some degree of control. So I hope that answered your question.
Yes, sir. Thank you very much. And I just want to implore people to please include your children in this conversation. Go back and have this conversation with your children. And I know I'm not trying to get off topic, because it is topic. It is essential to what we're doing, because, you know, I'm in my 50s. And so it's my prayer that, you know, my family, someone in my family will carry on what I'm trying to do right now, because this is a nonstop effort. You never stop wanting to be an owner. You never stop wanting to have some form of financial security. And the reason why I implore you to include your children, because you know that we're losing them. And we're losing them to violence. We're losing them to gangs. We're losing them to substance abuse. They have this rainbow fentanyl out here now that kills children in 2.2 seconds if you don't get them a Narcan shot. This is the state of the world today. This is the state of your world today. And so don't just think, oh, this is something that I have to do. You need to start talking to your children about ownership, about money, about economics, to the best of your ability, and share the information that you get on the website with them, because there is a place for them. You know, we're in a situation now where we're going to own or be owned. And when I say be owned, I mean going back to that old time way where we're picking cotton or we're picking greens and peas and beans out of the field to go to the market or someone else. We're going back to sharecropping, because we're not taking the initiative to develop the skills that's going to keep us in the working market that's coming real soon. 2030 is not that far away. That's 7 years away almost. And so I want people to please join in. Some of you are on the line. I want to hear from you. Press 1 on your dial pad if you have a question or even a comment. We want to hear from you. Okay, so, Brother Gene, I want to talk about for a second the impact of what does this really, really look like? I know we talked about ownership. We talked about in the community. We talked about, you know, infrastructure coming up in the community. We talked about a little Vernon kind of hinted toward gentrification. But just something simple as housing for families. How can people benefit from housing? I mean, what would the housing situation look like with this plan?
Well, if you hear, if you listen to the Democrats in Washington today and listen to most of your Democratic politicians in your community, you know, everybody's on the same bandwagon. Everybody tries to find the easy way out and stick in the norm. And the norm when it comes to housing, affordable housing. We need affordable housing. Well, to keep it plain and simple, affordable housing, they're talking nothing about nothing but welfare, you know, housing vouchers. Yes, you need them, but not so many of them. Under this plan, under the Citizen Land Development Co-op, we have a way where affordable housing, yes, but you give them people the opportunity to own the home. It can be done. We have a way of doing that, not just being renters for the rest of your life, you know, until you die, renters. They can utilize the affordable housing program that they have on the books today in Washington that everybody is pushing for. That, like I said, it's nothing but welfare, but with our plan, and if they implement our plan, and they have to be educated on what DASI, ESJ, and CSA is introducing, take the affordable housing plan where after certain most investments like that pay themselves off, you know, 7 to 10 years, or maybe, you know, some, you know, 15 years. But after that time, it's under the Home Equity Corp, and I'll give Norm a chance to talk about that. But after such time, you own the home. You are an outright owner of the home. So we can take the affordable housing plan that the government now has, but turning the people into ownership. And I want to go back to something that you mentioned about we're headed toward sharecropping. Well, believe it or not, listen, you're in industrial sharecropping today. That's all it is sharecropping. You know, at the end of the week, in sharecropping, after post-slavery, they went into sharecropping, where they work the fields, picking cotton or whatever, and they got a ticket at the end of the week, and they went down to the merchant with the ticket. They had been getting sugar and bread all during the week, so when they took the little ticket down to the merchant to get more for the next following week, well, they learned only had a little bit left, you know, because they had been getting credit all week, you know, from their credit to buy things that they needed. And they get a ticket, like I said, you get a ticket at the end of the year. That was sharecropping. Well, today, you're just in industrial sharecropping. You work your job, you get a ticket, a paycheck every week, and at the end of the week, you got to pay the electric bill, the credit card bill, the car payment, the car insurance, food costs, and you only have a little bit left at the end of the week. That's sharecropping. That's all we're in today. We're modern-day slaves. No matter what color you are, black, brown, yellow, red, or white, if you're in the corporate world, you are a sharecropper and you have become a wage slave. We have to get away from all that. And Vernon mentioned something. He said, you know, about, you know, we see development going on in our communities, you know, outsiders coming in your community building, you know, housing and so forth. Well, on our website, if you go to our website on the home page, we have what we call the three who's. The question that you must begin to ask is who owns it, who controls it, and who will pay for it? Those are the three who's. who owns it, who controls it, and who pays for it. Usually whoever pays for it is the one that owns it and controls it. Is that you? So we can't live vicariously to see. And some politicians, the politicians, I'm not dumping on them, but they have to be educated. You know, some people say that gentrification is good, developing the community is good. Well, what benefit does it have to the citizens that live there? They're still consumers. They're not becoming owners. So everybody comes into the community to benefit off of our consumerism. Well, we have to get away from that. We have to become producers. And there's a way, and it's feasible. A lot of things that we're introducing, a lot of things that with the legislation and all that, a lot of things that DASA-ESA introducing is already being done by local, state, and federal government, but it's not. The one thing that's missing is ownership. So they're spending the money. You know, 65% of the taxation power in federal, state, and local government, 65% of that goes into welfare. So if we can minimize the need of welfare, you could minimize the cost of government.
Okay.
Gene, there's an answer to the question of home, Homeowners Equity Corporation. If you go to the website of the Center for Economic and Social Justice, that's at www.cesj.org, and you look for what's called the Resident-Owned Homeowners Equity Corporation. It could receive, you see, as long as you got people who could put together many homes that would be available to poor people, however they get their income, in other words, their homeowners be able to pay the rent. I'll tell you how you can turn renters into owners. If you have large enough, if you have professionally done a homeowners equity corporation. You got to get professionals in it. And what they would, and what would happen, part of the charge would be for paying for the cost of putting together, it could be 10 homes or it could be 1,000 homes. And you get the financing through the issuance of new shares that people could buy just as they would any other kinds of shares, the shares for the production of automation and artificial intelligence. You know, it's an economic corporation, but it deals with home ownership. The citizen or the each citizen or each family that would have the home and pay into it from whatever they can get temporarily. This is not going to happen. Everything's going to happen overnight. But every citizen could every year use their housing voucher, and that pays for the cost of manufacturing the home. So you need management of a kind that is willing to make the overall corporation to be owned by the mortgage, the people who go in to purchase a mortgage. And then as they pay for the cost of their own home, the one that they live in, over time they pay the equity down, then they would have the right to get to become full owners of the, if they wish. But this whole, the whole entity would provide all kinds of services to make sure that things are done, that any kind of improvements that are needed or a breakdown of any of the water or electricity right now, my house 2 weeks ago had a fire and we can't live in it for another 2 months. I'm calling you from a hotel because my house, it may take about 2 to 3 months to repair it. Okay, but the point I'm making is that you can make the poor who can get housing vouchers to be able to, part of that housing is voucher is to pay for whoever's the managers and owners. Well, if this is a citizen-owned entity, as I said, you could have a dozen homes, you could have thousands of homes, and it gives each family who stay there and stay in that particular house, when they pay the full cost of that home, then they get the license, the private property rights. You see, and if they don't have to leave, they can continue in and just pay for its services after that.
So, listen, we at the last hour, and I want to make sure that we make it plain for people and to, you know, speak on the solutions. The solution to all of this is two things. It's education about this new economic paradigm and involvement. We need people to get involved because the legislation that we're talking about was passed in the state of Missouri. So it does nothing for me in Texas or anybody in New York or Illinois or Louisiana or whatever. This is legislation that was passed in Missouri. Now, we know that red states in particularly will definitely put up a fight about anybody other than the 1% obtaining wealth and ownership. The one thing was so admirable about Dr. Martin Luther King that stays with me, that drives me, is that he was able to change policy because it is policies that actually run America. The policies that people write, that the government writes, and that you vote on. And sometimes you don't know what you're voting on. A lot of people will, you know, ask you to go to the polls and vote on this and vote on that. But then they have all these little bills. You know, you're looking at the person. The person is the distraction. He's talking good. He's looking good. He's making all these promises. But there are all these other little policies that they're implementing, and we just go vote because we've been voting Democrat for the last 40 years. You know, three generations of my family were Democrats, so I'm going to vote Democrat when the policies may not be the best. Or it works the same on the other side. And so in your state, wherever you may be, this legislation needs to be passed. And this is something that all people, black, white, red, and brown, can get behind and be participatory in it and be proactive and not reactive to the policies that come out after you elect a public official and say, oh, he's doing this, this, that, and the other, but actually you voted for the bill. Now the bill is law. And now you got to go through hell and high water to try to reverse something that is impacting your very lives. And I want people to understand that, yes, Missouri has a great legislation, but we need it nationwide. We need people to be proactive. We need you to raise your voices. I'm not talking about, you know, marching and carrying on in the streets. That's good for whatever it's good for. Never an advocate of that. What I am an advocate of is people actually coming together and making a demand on an agenda. This agenda is something that everyone can get behind. It's nothing to argue about. It's not, oh, this is only favoring the blacks, or, oh, this is only favoring the whites. This is for everyone. It is no excuse for no one not to get behind this and support this. Because, yes, Missouri is going to become the model city of how this actually works. But if you don't live in St. Louis, Missouri, or in the state of Missouri, this is not going to benefit you. But you can become a part. Just let me finish. But you can become a part of something that is so profound that will impact the lives of you, your children, your grandchildren, and your great-grandchildren. Yes, sir, Dr. Kirk.
I agree with you that every state of the union should pass the legislation that was passed because of Gene's activity in Missouri. However, it will not be the solution because Gene knows, and he's known this from the beginning, that you got to get money into it. And the money can be determined by the St. Louis Fed. They have the power to create money for all the activities that can be done. Much can be done by enabling every child, woman, and man within the state to become an equal owner of the land. But then when you have to decide, we will be in charge. We will be able to hire the people who are specialists to come in, but you need the money to carry on the projects. And Gene knows that was
well,
going to
you know,
be done.
Dr. Carlin, Gene said that. You know, he said how the Federal Reserve can create money for
That's
everything.
Right.
For everything.
That's right.
So what I'm saying is that they can definitely create money for this, but it has
yes.
to be a demand. They're not just
That's
gonna
it.
We can't just offer this to them and put it on the Federal Reserve's desk and say, oh, okay, get behind
no,
this.
No.
It has to be a demand. And the demand has
Martin
to come
Luther
from
King.
Everyone.
And Martin Luther King had the answer that when you have a need to change the system, you have to organize peaceful people power. And if you don't do that, it's all talk.
And so,
if
I am inviting
the people to go after the Fed. To say to the Fed, you have the power. Don't tell us you don't. You have the power, but you're not using it. And that's what I'm saying to you, that we have to be clear that we don't tell people, oh, all you have to do is pass the legislation that Gene was able to get. No, it's not enough, and Gene knows that.
Yes, and Dr. Kern, he said that earlier. And what I'm trying to get people to understand is that this legislation can be duplicated all over the nation.
Yes.
But you have to have the nation as a whole or as a part, whether it's, you do it by state or however you want to do it. But we got to have people supporting this legislation. And if you go to docforesj.org, you will get a very, you know, detailed outline of everything that this legislation provides. And we need people to get behind this agenda because we have to take this agenda to a higher level. Whether we do it state by state, if I feel it's state by state, it's going to take forever. But I think once you get it in the hands of your local politicians, make a demand that they give you a response, then
right.
we can get this to Washington and get them to vote on this. That's why I keep reiterating to go to DOS4ESJ.org so that you see everything besides what we're talking about.
Yes.
Pardon me. This is Dr. Muhammad, Dr. Wisdom Tusi. I'd like to ask you, how much time do you have left? I just wanted to know. I've enjoyed everyone so much that I just had to just be patient and just sit back and just really absorb all of the information that I'm receiving. How much time?
About 50 minutes.
Okay, all right. And this is Dr. Wisdom Tusi of Joseph Visions Technologies and Economic Development and Solar Electric Power, LLC.
Where are you located? Where are you from?
I'm located here in the city of Alton, St. Louis. And Dr. Curlin, it's a great honor to hear your voice, and as well as Brother Gordon, it's a great honor. I give you both the greetings of peace. Assalamu alaikum. And I would be very brief because I think that so much has been discussed, but I would just narrow it down to answer to the question of the other gentleman about the solutions. And this is what all of this is about. If we narrow it all down to just the solutions, I would just like to interject a quick thought on two levels, on two things, and that is one, we need to look at presenting the idea of owning the infrastructure, literally owning the infrastructure and where we live. And that infrastructure must be to include the electrical or energy sector of the sector of the society where we live. And we have come up with we are already moving, making some new directions right now, Dr. Carolyn, to actually putting together a 25-megawatt solar manufacturing plant for the Midwest area. We're already making moves toward also they're already creating a drone manufacturing plant here in Illinois. And what we want to do is also look at new applications of how those drones can be used, and that we want those drones to be owned and controlled locally by the people, not having outside people coming into our communities with the drones. So we also looked at also the infrastructure in terms of the ownership of the solar electric streetlight district. We were looking at owning the streetlight district that would cut 80% of the city's budget. That money by itself is that when we look at using alternative energy can become our own anti-poverty program, because the rising cost of inflation is directly affected by the rising cost of energy. So we can look at this as some of the suggestions. I don't want to take any more time than that, but my suggestion at this point is to recommend that we own the power that where we live. And that means that once we own the power, we own the future. Why do we own the future? Because once we own the power that runs the machine.
And that deals
with the artificial intelligence, the robotics, and everything else.
Right. I'm totally with you. And as a matter of fact, I worked in what Gene passed was something that I worked in East St. Louis with Yvetta Young, Representative Yvetta Young. And one of the things was there were people dealing with the drones. But in that, it was very clear we needed the St. Louis Fed to provide the money through the banks so that we could, because no matter what we do, where's the money going to come from? So what you're saying makes all kinds of sense, and I totally support it. And so I'm, you know, I really want to talk with you at greater length, and urge that you take a look at our website, because Gene's website makes reference to the Center for Economic and Social Justice, and go to the articles section, so you'll see what was done in East St. Louis, but she died, and that was what one of the great heroes of my life, who I'd been working with for about 10 years, and she was terrific. Had no problems at all about the concept. And I think what Gene's done is put together as I say, step one. It's an important step, but now we want to focus on the Fed. That's the key.
Also, I was talking with Dawood earlier. He broke down the word imagination that I never heard. Dr. Dawood, can you share that with us? Imagination? Is it still on?
Yes. You know, when we want to tap into the youth, we have to tap into the imagination of our youth.
Right.
And even with what we have, we don't want to use the 18th century or 17th century or 19th century economic model.
That's
what
right.
We need is a vision, and the people that don't have vision shall perish. So we want a 22nd vision that can be able to address
mm-hmm.
the problems that we see that are systemic within our communities. And
mm-hmm.
that comes with imagination. So when you break down the word imagination, can you imagine a nation that whereas you no longer have an electric bill? Can you imagine a nation or imagination that we don't have a grocery bill? How you can cut 30%, 50% of your grocery bill, cut the sewer bill, your water bill. You can cut your heating bill, your electric bill. We can do that with alternative energy technology.
Mm-hmm.
And with this alternative technology, we can create new forms of economic systems. I am an engineer, and I have successfully have done some things already, of which I've been in the newspapers and talked about these things before, and actually have accomplished those things. We have battery storage capacity. They're getting ready to shut down these power plants right now, 2 gigawatts of power plants, because of the fact that the coal has contaminated the water. But now we have the alternative. The alternative to dirty water is coming up with systems that can clean the water. The alternative to polluted air that we breathe is to come up with an alternative that can sanitize the air, as well as the food and everything else that we eat. So there's a way to cut down the viruses that are in the air. But we have systems that we can create. But this is just the beginning. As I said again, right now I'm going to keep it brief. I just wanted to let you know that we would like to introduce new ideas that will tap into the imagination of our youth. And that means that there are job opportunities where we could be able to get them to become FAA 107 drone pilot license that we need to be done. We can be able to create our own power, what we call economic empowerment security zones, where when people come to shop and everything, those areas can be safe. People can feel safe no matter what their age is or whether it's for the elderly to the young. We can be able to come up with creative ideas that we can be able to even address things that that would mean that we could be able to address the climate change. We can address the natural disasters. We can be able to come up with many different new processes, and I think that this is just the beginning. And so what I'm going to do now is I'm just going to pause on that conversation because there's so much more I could speak about, because when we talk about energy, energy is the new alternative economic model. What I'm saying is that when we talk about currency, you're looking at the petrodollar. Now that we're looking at the petrodollar and how it's impacting the governments and nations around the world, then what is the alternative? That alternative is that alternative energy, which is dealing with a green sustainable society. A green sustainable society can become our own anti-poverty program, that we can eliminate poverty and not have to worry about this subject about welfare, because of the fact that, you know, there was a, you know, you and I had talked about this before, Dr. Carlin. I know you don't like me bring his name up, but there was something that comes up where they were talking about also creating policy, like the sister was saying, and what you have been talking about, Dr. Carlin, for years I can't get her name right now. You just mentioned that. Yeah, but Buckminster Fuller,
you were saying just what Bucky said, that the way the measure money is
yes.
in the cost of a it's kilowatt
in,
hour.
It's in kilowatt hours. And then also there's this other one called, what is his name, Professor Rodney Shakespeare, where he was talking about for every piece yep. of machinery or piece of technology that comes into the world that displaces the need for human labor, that they must be charged some type of fee or something that could be used toward poverty elimination, because of the fact that when you're looking at those jobs being displaced, those are permanent jobs that will be permanently replaced. And so the only way mm-hmm. that we can deal with that is that for every machine, for every kilowatt hour that machine is mm-hmm. placing the need, then that need to be a charge and that money be put into poverty elimination. But see, that's like
wow.
a utopia. Some people can't imagine.
Yes.
Some people can't imagine a society where you don't have an electric bill. Okay, I'm getting ready to be in my house and I got a solar 5,000 watt solar system put on my house. And with this, I know I won't have another $300, $500 a month electric bill. Why? Because here it is, you're talking about a situation where they got to close down the power plants, the coal power plants, so they have to borrow electricity from another state or another country like Canada. So then they charge your mm-hmm. rates, raise your rates up because they had to borrow the electricity. So then you know, mm-hmm. what they call a transmission fee. Well, if they're charging you transmission fees on your electric bill and your electric rates is going up because they're cutting out the coal, then that means that our natural gas, if you even look at the war breakout and you end up with a natural gas shortage, then what's going to happen with electricity for sure?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So now we're looking into a whole different perspective on this thing. I really don't want to go deep into this right now. I just want to just say a few things, and I can come back we can come back at this at another time. Dr. Curlin, it's a great honor and a pleasure to hear you.
Well,
hear you, and
great
well
honor.
As
yeah,
also Gene Norman, the hard work that you do. I salute you, brother. I salute you what you're doing, and sister, I appreciate the hard work that you do, and all of you that are here on this panelist. I am very honored to be able to hear the great insights that you provide. Thank you for your time.
And thank you. Yes. Thank you for all of that insight, brother. And we would love to talk to you again, you know, maybe in a more professional setting where we can talk and share some ideas and build with you. Because like I say, we're looking for new leaders. We're looking to build new relationships and cooperative economics. This is what this is all about. And I want anybody who has a question to please press 1 on your dial pad. We would love to hear from you. And I don't want to, you know, leave people silent. So, Brother Vernon, you have anything further you want to offer us today? We have about 37 minutes.
There we are. No, I'm enjoying the conversation. Every time Dr. Curlin and Brother Gene open their mouth, I just, you know, get sparked with inspiration. So as Brother Dawood said, I'm ready for action. I'm ready for, you know, finding out how we get to the solutions, what we going to do, what we going to do next, what we going to do now.
All right. Well, let me tell you what we need to do. This is what we need to do. DOS is a brand new organization. The doors are wide open, okay? We need people in every line of work. We need grant writers. We need board members. We just need people to be proactive. We need administrative assistants. We need people who are ready to come to work. We need marketing specialists. So everything that can possibly be done in this whole world, the United States, we need someone in that field of expertise to come on and join with us. Because the most important thing, there are two things that are very key, and that is getting this legislation nationwide and also galvanizing people. But I want to stick to, for the next few minutes, about building leaders. We have 9 areas of council that are distinctly laid out of everything that it takes to build a nation. When you are recreating an economic system, you are rebuilding a nation. Trust me. And so we have listened to and partaken in all of these old policies that have not been beneficial not only to our economy, but has not even been a beneficial to our own humanity, our own health. You know, we need people to get back into agriculture. I remember when I was back in Prairie View in the 80s, even though it was a school that, you know, gave degrees in agriculture, that was one of the focuses of Prairie View A&M University. However, I remember that the class count for a degree in agriculture, I think in 1987 when I graduated, was less than 100. Because no one wants to go back to agriculture, because I remember them saying, I'm not a slave, I'm not going to be digging in no dirt. And now here we are at a point to whereas we have to realize that there are hardly any, I think there may be one or two black farmers in America. And when I say farmers, I'm talking about big farmers that, you know, they harvest their crop, they pack it up, they sell it to major food chains and things of that nature. But people forgot that they have to eat. And what you are eating is not beneficial to your health. And so as Brother Gene mentioned about urban farming, so if you're in agriculture, we definitely need you. We need you to tell somebody else about this platform. We're going to be here every Sunday live at 4 o'clock. We want your input. We want new leaders. And what is a leader? A leader is someone that has an idea and a determination to make things happen. And I don't care if you're 20 or 200 years of age, we need you to come on board with us to help rebuild this new, to help build, I'm sorry, a new economic paradigm that is going to work for everyone. Another thing I want to stress about is the galvanizing of people behind poverty. A lot of you are going to vote in November for whatever you're voting for, because I don't know. But make sure that when you vote, that those policies are not something that is going to tear your community down, that's going to relocate you, that's going to raise your utilities, that's going to put industry before people, because that is what we have been victims of, for many, many years with no say-so. It is time out for us to stop coming together for concerts and movies and parties and BS. I need you to go to your town hall meetings. I need you to go to your council meetings in your cities and have an impact on policy. Because when they have city council meetings, none of us are there. We galvanize behind the deaths of you know, people who have been killed unjustly, but let's galvanize behind something that is going to produce life. And that is what Docs for ESJ is all about. We're trying to produce life. Are there any questions or comments?
Yeah, Queen. I just wanted to mention you were talking about, you know, red states and blue states. Missouri is a red state, and that legislation was signed into law by a Republican governor. And also, you talked about, you know, leadership. You know, we need servant leaders. You know, if you go to our website, we have a link on there, justice-based leadership. And that's what we lack within the leadership of today, is justice-based leadership and it's establishing justice with all the decisions that you make within an organization or business or, you know, a church or whatever, mosque. you know, one thing is to establish justice when making decisions. And we have it on the website, justice-based leadership and servant leadership. Also, you know, listening to Dawood, Muhammad, and Dr. Norm, Carolyn, and of course myself, we have the solution to the problem. You know, what the reason we're in the condition that we're in today with an 8.4% inflation rate, you know, is because they're operating on, you talked about old policies. These are old policies that don't work because most of the old policies are based on the wage system. That's just one input to production, is the wage system. And the old policies are based on a wage slave system that all has to stop. And I just take confidence knowing that we, I mean, if you listen to Dawood, you know, the thing, he also has something he didn't touch base on maybe at a later date, is the street lighting district. I mean, where street lighting can be, these things exist today, you know, but we're not utilizing them because nobody is out there advocating for these things, and that's what we need within DOS for ESJ. And you talked about, you know, town hall meetings, and we've got the election coming up in November. You know, the youth are not participating in the political process because they just have given up on, you know, the political system. But we have a vehicle and something that will give them, you know, encourage them to begin to participate in the political process because their aim and their goal is ownership. I mean, that's, so we have to get to the youth and educate them and give them the reason to show up at the polls. I mean, if you look at the numbers of voter turnout rate, it's staggering, you know. You also talked about, you know, this is a new way. I mean, but if the listening audience listened to the people that sat on this panelist today, if you just listen to it, it's common sense. It's not rocket science. I mean, it's plain and simple. But the thing is that it's plain and simple. You know, it's not, it don't take rocket science to figure these things out. But we as the descendants of American slaves, we got some. You hear within, you know, politicians in Washington, they talk about climate control. Well, you got to reduce the use of fossil fuels. And you got to look at clean energy, renewable energy. Mm-hmm. And we have a way of doing that, you know. So we really have to begin. Bottom line is put up or shut up. You know, we have the solutions to the problem. It's time to go to work, you know. People, if you care about your grandchildren, well, we fell the last generation. This is an opportunity where you can save your grandchildren's lives to be going back to servitude, slavery, because that's where it's headed if we don't change the system and change it now.
One thing, Gene.
Exactly.
Gene, one thing that could be done along the lines of what you're talking about is for people who teach to begin teaching what is offered by Justice University. In other words, it's a whole program, 10-week program, and in that you get to the principles. Now, had Martin Luther King been with us today, I think what he probably would do, not only promote the teaching of the Just Third Way, but also to begin to say the people must organize peaceful people power. And as a matter of fact, what he did in ending the laws against segregation by bringing hundreds of thousands of people from all over the country to come into Washington, and before you know it, by 1964, you had an end to the Segregation Act. But that wasn't enough. It was not enough because you still had the economic system. But if he was listening to what Daoud was saying, what you were saying, he would say, why can't we bring, and I'm sure King would have done this, why can't we bring a million people into Washington to the Lincoln Memorial? And across the street is the Federal Reserve, and they would surround the Federal Reserve and say, change your policies. We want you to bring money power to the people. You see, what the vote does for politics, money power does. Money power for the people would do for economics. And you live, the economic system is something that people know from a daily basis, not once a year or once every 4 years. So this is what I think we have to begin thinking. How do we get enough leaders like Gene to begin to attract people power, starting with the Federal Reserve in St. Louis? Why not help Gene by going by helping to organize what Martin Luther King would have organized, to have start the first demonstration at the St. Louis Fed, and having a meeting with the St. Louis Fed, asking them what's wrong, prove that there's something wrong with what we're saying about that money power must be democratized for every citizen.
Yes, sir. Okay, well, we're down to 3 minutes now. And Gene, I know we did this on one of our pre-recorded shows that we use for podcasts, but I want to spend the last 20 minutes or so, or, you know, however much time we can, into talking about cooperative banking, because I don't think enough of us are aware of cooperative banking versus the traditional banking systems that we sometimes utilize. So can you tell us about cooperative banking just right fast, and maybe get people, encourage people to change the banks that they utilize, because it's not benefiting them in any kind of way. You know, they don't give us loans. You know, they charge us fees, and they utilize our money, and we get no return. So can you talk about cooperative banking before we go?
Yeah.
Well, I can.
You know,
yeah.
Go ahead, Norm.
No. Please, go ahead.
Yeah, you know, there, you know, several types of bank, commercial banks, you know, cooperative banks and black-owned banks, you know, commercial banking lending. You know, we have disparities in all levels of institutions. I mean, even with the banking system, you know, you are discriminated against for loans. And, you know, these big banks, you know, Wells Fargo, Bank of America, U.S. Bank, PNC Bank, you know, all are commercial banks that they're for profit. They're for profit. And if you look at, you know, the enormous fees that you're charged, and they're not going to give you, they'll give you fine money for you for, you know, consumer items and going into debt for a car. You know, they're fine financing for, you know, $40,000 or $30,000 vehicle. But if you go in there for a loan, they're going to tell you no. Cooperative banks, most cooperative banks, which are called credit unions, they're community banks. And they're not-for-profit community banks. And the depositors are the shareholders of community banks and cooperative banks, where you actually get a share of the profits that are generated from the community bank or the cooperative bank. So it's a big difference. And we must learn, you know, begin to, you know, learn the
financial system and how it works, but I encourage everybody to look at cooperative banks, credit unions, and community banks and black-owned banks that are geared around, you know, community development, community empowerment, and you'd be more likely to get a loan from a cooperative bank or a community bank for an investment before you would get one from a commercial bank. But, you know, there's a big difference, and we just have to get it cooperative. I mean, it's owned by the depositors. I mean, we just have to get into that understanding of how financial institutions work and the ones that benefit us the most.
Okay. And Vernon, I know you have something to say about this. Give us your insight on banking.
Oh, my goodness. You speaking my language now. Financial literacy is going to be critical to this whole movement that we're starting. Every individual needs to get smarter about learning how money works and how to get money to work for you, because you can only work so many hours for your money. So it's very important to learn how other people are using your money to make money for them and how you can start making moves with your money to make your money work for you. Whether you talk about infinite banking, whether you talk about family banking, we just have to embrace that. So I think that's the hammer hitting the nail on the head. Understanding the bank system, how they utilize our money and how we can turn that around so that our money is actually working for us. If you have to get up and go to work in the morning, I guarantee you it's because your money is unemployed. So let's turn that around.
Yes, sir. Absolutely.
He also mentioned that was very important is understanding, you know, the system and financial literacy is so important, you know, especially within the DOS community. We have to learn the compound interest rule, you know, how does it calculate the compound interest rule? I mean, we don't know that. These are things that we must begin to understand. It's the compound interest rule, you know, things like that. We have to pretty much start focusing. Every home needs a balanced budget. Every home needs a balanced budget. And we have to stop living beyond our means and really buckle down and take a look at this thing. Like I say, it's not rocket science. You know, I was talking to some people yesterday, and they, you know, at the end, you know, of our conversation, they said it. They say academia did not teach us on the understanding of the money system. You know, banks once paid 3%, 4% on saving. They used to have 6% CDs. This was just 25, 30 years ago. Now, 25, 30 years today, banks are paying 0.5%, 0.05% on savings. There's no CD out there that pays a 6.6% interest. Not here in America. A 6% interest rate on a CD. They're down to, what, 2%, 3% now. So there are some changes taking place in America that we, the disproportionate of black people and descendants of slaves, are not paying attention to. And the only time we feel the hurt when we go into the grocery store to buy a loaf of bread, you know, we say, man, they're getting expensive. Well, that's what you call inflation. And you can't keep pumping money into a system that's not generating any tax dollars to government, and that's not backed up by any assets or production.
That's what causes inflation.
Hello.
And that's what we get today.
Yeah. Gene, one thing, the monetary ideas that we're talking about in terms of the just third way was not developed by me. It was developed by a man named Lewis Kelso. And in that, when Kelso talked about money, he says, right now, the system, the economic system, the finance system, is based on the fallacy that everything must be done with past savings. So what I've been hearing in the last few minutes is a talk about what can we do with past savings. Kelso said, what about future savings? And that's the system that is absolutely essential if we're going to have a more democratic ownership system, that you can create money based on future savings. And that principle is vital to everything that I talk about, and I think you do understand that. And so I would say that under, for example, utilities, the electric, whether you're talking about electric or gas utilities or other water, no matter what it is that you're getting, there's going to be a cost involved. The question is, in improvements of those systems, well, can the participants, that is, those who use it, can they become an owner? Not now, under past savings notions. The growth that takes place, the innovation is going to have to be on the concept of future savings in a money system
Kelso.
That makes it, yes.
Okay, and that is exactly a very keen point that I think everyone needs to read. Sit down and think over what he just said, because what you just said is a key point. Watch this. We can cut 80% of the state's energy costs, and that savings could result back into in making improvements in an old dying system into a more modern infrastructure. Like, for example, you're talking about with the lights, for example, in the city. The city's paying so much money. Do you know, for example, the present utility company is a monopoly? The present, all these systems are monopolies. They don't have true competition. There's no such thing as a free open market if you don't have true competition. And under this monopoly, just with Ameren alone, do you know Ameren does $5 billion a year? Just Ameren alone in Missouri do $5 billion a year.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm just showing you just with that alone. Then we get into another level of thinking when we start getting from that point to the next. What you're saying is concise and direct. We can be able to take the future savings from what we could get from eliminating, because right now, if we have a global war, which is what you're looking at right now, World War III, and they're already showing you how they cut natural gas to places in Europe and other areas, then all of a sudden, now you're looking at driving up energy costs. But now we put these safety nets in place, or even dealing with natural disasters, earthquakes, and things like that. We reduce the cost of what FEMA pays just in trying to address the issues of what you see happening in Florida.
Exactly. I agree.
I mean, this subject can go on, and I think that we must own the infrastructure. It is not there is no such thing, I don't want to go too deep into this other subject now, and I'm thinking on it. But right now, the people where they live need to own the infrastructure where they live. Nobody outside of that community should be owning nothing.
Hello.
Yes.
Yes.
Are you guys calling from Missouri, St. Louis, by chance, or Kansas City?
No, we're right here in. I'm here in Illinois. So how you doing, my brother? I haven't heard from you in a long time.
I heard you mention Ameren. I know Ameren supplies electricity for Missouri.
Yeah.
I'm down south right now.
Oh, you are? Okay, great. Okay.
Can you tell us who's calling and where you from?
My name is Pianchi.
Yes. How you doing,
Pianchi?
I was a builder.
Hey. It's been a long time.
This is Dr. Wilson, St. Louis area. But anyway, you know what I'm going to say is this. The one thing with this group that you talk about, these kids aren't being educated.
No,
they're not.
They
cannot compete. That's a major problem. Only a handful, and they are emphasized in too many areas. Well, not many areas. Too many of them are trying to get into sports that they never go succeed totally in. That is totally ridiculous. You have that. And as far as money is concerned, the thing today is these blockchains and cryptocurrency. Your children need to learn how to code. Don't teach your children chess. Teach them how to do AlphaGo. That's the game, the board game, that the Asians who dominate the artificial intelligence mode, that's what their children start off learning before they can even sit up. So, no, education for African-American children is dismal. You look at the graduation rate, you look at the performance proficiency rate in math, like East St. Louis High School is less than 1% now is proficient. Reading less than 5% is efficient.
Well,
you get to argue with some of these coaches, the first thing they will say is test scores don't make no difference. Well, if you don't have a test score, you give them kids a test score to get them on the team. You see how fast they can run, how far they can throw, and how high they can jump. But anyway, I'm gonna let you guys get back to your program.
Hey, listen, don't stop now.
Well, thank you, Brother Pianchi.
Yeah.
Okay. All right, so any other questions or comments? We have about nine more minutes. And let me just remind you, please, this is radio. So when you talk over each other, the sound becomes distorted. So just if you don't mind speaking one at a time. So
who's the moderator?
I am.
Then moderate. Okay, so because I've been here waiting for a whole hour, haven't said a word.
Okay, what's
your
name,
brother? My time is important to me. My name is Daoud Muhammad, Dr. Wilson Tse.
Okay, brother, we talked to you, and I muted your phone so that you could speak.
Okay, the part about the Federal Reserve, Norman, I need to ask you one thing. So you keep saying about going to the Federal Reserve to get the, and get them to print the money, but what would be the steps to go forth to demand that they put this money in the infrastructure that we identify that we want to be able to own in our own infrastructure in our own communities?
Yeah, the answer is peaceful people power, but people power numbers. And so we got a lot of teaching to do, particularly of the young people who are now going into crime.
What would be the steps to present? Because first thing is when you're talking about the Federal Reserve, we have to go to the Federal Reserve and say, okay, look, we need $100 billion. Okay?
As I said, the first demonstration in history when was one that I kind of sparked, and that is when the farmers came to Washington to complain about the cost of the interest charges. They were up to 13% or something. It was around 1960. Six or it was around that time they came in, and I talked to the farmers. Most of them were white, and there was one DAS that I could recall. 400 they brought their tractors to Washington, and it stopped everything. And so someone put me in touch with the leaders, and I said, look, Marion Barry is the mayor. He knows of our ideas. Why don't we set up a meeting with him to allow you to do the first demonstration in history around the Fed in order to challenge their interest rate policies? Mm-hmm. So the farmers listened. They weren't dumb. They understood what was going on in the system.
Mm-hmm. What was the outcome?
Pardon? The outcome was let me tell you. Before that, Marion Barry had gotten all the tractors to be forced onto the
state. Yeah, that was on national news too. I remember that back in the day. I remember that was on the news.
Uh-huh. Well, did you know how it ended though? I went with the leaders to Marion Barry, told them what we want to do, and he said, okay, 250 of the tractors can go. Next day, they opened up the barriers where they were all, all 450 went out and went down Constitution Avenue, surrounded the Fed, and we had a meeting there. Okay, there was no follow-up. Had there been follow-up, but we did have several other demonstrations before the Fed, but, you know, maybe 50 people at the most that we could interest. As a matter of fact, Bob Brantley was one of them who was supposed to be on today's program, and he gave a talk at one of our demonstrations. But as I said, that's not enough. What is enough is to begin organizing the young people, certainly starting in St. Louis, and then moving BAS to a national organization that would call for a million people to come, but not just DAS, everybody joining DAS people, but the DAS would be leading the way, and for the reasons that Gene and I talked about before. Now, mm-hmm. It seems to me that if you don't do that, you know, we'll be talking to each other and nothing
will happen. Mm-hmm. Before you guys get off the air, Wisdom, make sure you contact me. I ain't talked to you in decades. I left my chat room.
Please do. Why don't you
I need to get the number. Hey, you got a pencil? Just write it down. You know the area code. You ready? 677-4953.
Okay.
Yeah, I haven't talked to you in ages, man. Last time I seen you, you was up in a man lift about 70 feet in the air.
Yeah, you remember that, don't you?
Yeah.
Well,
I'll talk
right
to
now,
you
we work. But when you get a chance, I want to introduce you to someone. We're working on a $250 million manufacturing plant.
Well, I just done about a $2 or $4 billion design for a Nigerian company for a seaport. And I'm getting ready to do another design for some people in the Delta region. Over
right.
In Nigeria.
Okay.
Chicken form.
Let me get that number again.
677-4953. You know the area.
Okay, 677.
4953.
4953. Okay, I got the area code. Yeah.
All right. I'm happy to hear you still kicking, man. Good.
Oh,
thank you.
Man, I tell you, I've been busy. Been very, 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 very busy. That's for sure. All right.
Okay, gentlemen. We're down 2 minutes, and I want to have everybody make their closing statements, please. So, Brother Gene, anything you want to say closing up?
Yeah. How do we, you know, Daru's question, how do we, you know, begin to get to the Federal Reserve? Well, with the legislation we just passed, we're going to be reaching out to the Federal Reserve on the Citizen Land Development Co-op, and see, depending on what type of response we get, but galvanizing the people of St. Louis, especially, as you said, the youth. You know, we have to educate them and give them something to fight for. Right now, they don't have anything to fight for. And
but Jim, you know, the beauty of what Norm was, Dr. Norman Curling was saying is that about how, you know, sometimes when you go to the bank, you got, hey, where, how's your credit? But what he's saying is that we're looking at the future. We're building based upon the future savings, not the present savings. I love the way that's being presented. Is that the way to go about it, Brother Gene, to present that idea to the Fed as well?
Yes, because it's already written within the law, of the Federal Reserve Act of 1913, Section 2A, states that it can be, you know, by bills of exchange, meaning that based on future profits. So it's already written. It shouldn't. And what the Fed
we need to do it.
Today,
we need to get it down. We need to write it up. Can you write up something on that to try to? I mean, when you make that approach, can you formulate that so that you can put it in writing so when the time comes, we can lay it out before with Dr. Norman Kirkland to present to the Fed.
Yeah, because it's under existing law. It's just nobody's utilizing, and we have.
Well, they ain't utilizing because they're not bringing no plan to the table like we are.
Yeah,
well
exactly.
They don't use.
What'd you say,
the
Dr. Curler?
Future savings.
I heard you.
but they do say bills of exchange that they're supposed to provide both for mortgages, which is based on past savings, and bills of exchange, which are based on future savings. But they have not issued the money based on future savings.
Right.
They're still getting it from past savings.
It's key.
So
that's key. What you're saying is so important that I think that it sounds so simple, but it's so important about what you just exposed, really.
Right.
I think that's one of the flaws to the whole thing. I think that's some of the flaws to the whole thing.
What the Federal Reserve is doing today is that they're creating money for – remember what he said, based on future savings. What the Federal Reserve is doing today is creating money for government debt, which is based on future taxpayers. But it's not based on future profits. It's based on future taxpayers. They're financing their grandchildren's future today.
Okay. So now you got me corrected. You corrected me that time because I was thinking on projected future profits. But you're saying no. It's not looking at it from that perspective. You're looking at it from. Say that again for me, so I can get it in my head.
What the Federal Reserve is currently doing, they're printing money out of thin air, lending it to government, and it's based on the future taxpayers to pay it back. So in other they're financing your grandchildren's future today. But we have to turn it around. It was not intended for government to accumulate so much debt. That's not what the Federal Reserve was created for in the first place. But when they got the government into war, America at one time had a manageable debt that they can pay. Today, after the World War II and World War I, that's when the Federal Reserve began to print money to finance the wars. That's how America became so much in debt. And you can go.
So what
you're
talking about, debt elimination is like poverty elimination.
It's the equivalent of counterfeiting.
Okay, say, gentlemen, hey, listen, we out of time. We can always pick up this conversation. Go to docsforesj.org. If you all know how to contact each other, please do so. But we are out of time. But I thank everyone who was on the panel. I thank everyone who called in with a question or a comment. And we will see you back next week at the same time, 4 p.m. Central Standard Time, 5 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. May you be blessed. May you have peace, one nation, one love. Good night, y'all.
Mm-hmm. Good night. May God bless.
Yeah.
Come on, talk to me. You can't see.